Okay, everybody, sorry for the, excuse me, abbreviated Parsha Shmooze. Sorry I couldn't make it last night, but I definitely did want to get something uploaded for you guys so you can listen and shmooze a little bit while you're, I don't know, cooking for Shabbos, doing the dishes, going shopping, etc. Parsha's Noach, tremendous Parsha, obviously, super long and super packed. Definitely deserves more than the, I don't know, 20 or so minutes we're going to give it. But again, quick recap, as you know already, you guys studied this before, Noah is told to build an ark, there's a flood, the whole thing with the raven and the dove. Again, this is obviously cutting it very short. Noah leaves the Teva, he brings some karbanos, there's a bris, Hashem sends a rainbow, says he's never going to do that again. Noah gets drunk, he gets abused by, you know, one of his kids. There's a list of the 70 nations, a story about Nimrod, Tower of Babel, and we finish off with the 10 generations of Noach to Avram, about 160 psukim, a very sprawling, long, you know, parsha. But, you know, a couple of points that we should bring out here in the few minutes that we have. The first one is immediately, as we obviously have to deal with when you deal with Parshas Noach, is what's the deal with Noach? Noach, right, is Noach a tzaddik or not? So again, some midrashim, some gemaras, some rashis that you're probably slightly familiar with already. Again, the pasuk starts off, Eliyah told us Noach, ish tzaddik, tamim haya b'dor osav. Esau Elokim is alech Noach. Noach was a tzaddik, he was tamim, pure, perfect, righteous, however you want to say that, in his generation, and he walked with Hashem. So pretty good, right? Sounds pretty good. Problem is, the Rashi already, as you know, brings the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Medrash, etc., that Rashi's Gemaskal B'Dorosav, if you have a Chumash in front of you, that some people seem to say that it wasn't so great. It says, Yeshmer Abu Sein Ador Shimos Ol Shvach. Some of the rabbis said, you know, Tamim Hayab B'Dorosav, that he was pure and righteous in his generation. So the emphasis is on his generation. So some people say that that's great. That's a praiseworthy thing, in the sense that if he would have been in another generation that was even more righteous than obviously his terrible, Russia-filled, infested generation, he would have been even more righteous. And if he had been the door of Shal Tzadikim, Ayat Tzadik Yosar, he would have been a greater Tzadik. But Yeshu Dorshim was Tzadik Nai. Some people judge him the other way, meaning that the Pasuk says that he was righteous in his generation. Right? But if he had been in another generation, it wouldn't have been anything, right? Ilu hayah b'dor shel Avram lo hayah nechshav l'klum, right? He wouldn't have been thought of as anything. Now, how does Rashi himself seem to hold? Rashi himself seems to imply a little bit later on, if you have a chumash, so in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, he seems to be holding, as we'll see in a second, it's just, you know, it could be interpreted differently, but Rashi seems to be holding like the Gnai side, like the negative side, that Noach was not as great of a tzaddik as, you know, at first glance, the Pasuk seems to make him out to be. Because the Pasuk says, if you look at Pasuk Zayin, Perek Zayin, Vayavo Noach uvanav, this is after he's already built the Teva, it's already starting to rain. Vayavo Noach v'ishto u'neshevanav ito al ha-teva mipnei me hamabul. And Noach and his whole family went into the Teva because of the waters of the Mabul. And Rashi immediately picks up on that. And he says, just trying to find it over here. What do you mean, Rashi says, what do you mean? Because of the waters? What do you mean? I thought Hashem told him, build an ark and go into it. Right? No, so the Pasuk seems to imply that he went into the Teva because of the water, not because Hashem told him. So it says Rashi, Af Noach miktani emuna hoya. And we'll read it like this way, the first way. Right? Even Noach was of lesser, of smaller emuna. Mamin ve'ino mamin sheyavu ha-mabul. He believed, and he didn't believe, that the mabul would come. V'lo nichnas la-teva ad shedachku ha-mayim. And he only went into the teva until he was forced in by the waters. Now, what does that mean? What is it? How could a person be a mamin and an eino mamin? How could you believe and not believe at the same time? Well, just to, first of all, what does that mean? Just to illustrate, you know, someone, let's say someone who smokes, right? Like a smoker knows smoking is bad. But he can't help it, right? Obviously, we're talking before the physical addiction. Not that he can't help it, but he knows it's bad. He's seen the commercials. He sees the warning on the box, but eh. So he believes that it's bad, but he doesn't really believe that it's bad. So that's what we're talking about. That's what we mean when you're a mamin v'eino mamin. And you know, but you don't really know, or you don't really care, or maybe you haven't internalized it, etc. Now, we hear that, and we think, man, how could Noach not believe? What do you mean, mamin v'eino mamin? Noach didn't believe? What do you mean, didn't God speak to him? Right, and told him to build an ark, And Noah went through the motions. He built through the ark. He built the ark 120 years. He must have believed something. I mean, what do you mean he believed and he didn't believe? How in the world could Noah be like that? And yet, how many of us are exactly like Noah? Right? We believe, but we don't believe that, take your pick, that the Torah is real, that Hashem created the world, that Mashiach's going to come, that there's an Olam Haba. Right? Pick any one of the 13 Animamins. Right? How many of us are true Maminim? And how many of us are really kind of mamin veino mamin? Well, we believe, but we don't believe. Okay, fine. God didn't speak to us directly, but he kind of does indirectly every single day. Okay, if we don't hear the messages, fine. That's on us. Maybe some of us are not on the frequency to hear the messages. But lots of things happen in our lives that are aside from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, and we just have to be able to be ready to hear it. Right, if you're trying to look at something inappropriate on the internet, right, different levels of inappropriate, but let's just take whatever example you want, and the Wi-Fi keeps going out, or the page doesn't load, or you're trying to buy tickets to a concert that's probably not the greatest environment, and your credit card keeps on getting declined, or the website keeps on crashing. Again, every one of us could come up with like 5 or 10 examples of something that just seemed not to work out, and something that seemed to be min ha-shamayim. Right? These are not seemingly min ha-shamayim things. These are min ha-shamayim things, and these are the things where HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to us. Okay, we don't have the right frequency. We don't have the right Wi-Fi, right? The right channel, whatever metaphor you want to use. So maybe we don't hear it all the time. But yes, Hashem spoke to Noach directly, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to us too, even though it's less direct than Noach. And most of us, I would argue, unfortunately, are ma'aminim ve'eino ma'aminim. So before we think that that's so crazy, right, that a person can be mamin veino mamin, I think it requires a lot of introspection, because I think a lot of us, perhaps, definitely myself included, fit into that category. Second point that I wanted to point out is that the Kutzker Rebbe, at least it's quoted in the name of the Kutzker Rebbe, reads this Rashi differently in a beautiful way. A beautiful way. Rashi didn't write with commas. I didn't write with punctuation. That came later. That was a much later invention. So if you read it again, the Kutzker Rebbe just moves the comma, and that changes the entire Rashi. And really, it seems, once you read it like this, that Rashi holds that Noach was a tremendous tzaddik. And really, Rashi holds like the first opinion, that it was Dorshin Osor Shvach, that Noach was a tremendously righteous individual. And how you read the Rashi, if you have the text in front of you, is Af Noach Miktane Emuna Hayamamin. Not Miktane Emuna Haya, not that Noach was also Miktane Emuna, that he didn't have Emuna, but Miktane Emuna Hayamamin. He believed in the people who didn't have Emuna, meaning he believed in the people of his generation. Right? He was given 120 years to build the Teva, right? Chazal say that was so the people could do tshuva, so people could hear, oh yeah, Hashem, why are you building this ark? They asked him, what are you doing? So he said that Hashem told me that I'm going to destroy the world because of the sin, etc. So he believed in them, that they would do tshuva, and therefore, continuing on in Rashi, ve'eino mamin sheyavu amabel. Therefore, Noach didn't believe that the mabel would come. And therefore, he only went into the teva when the waters forced him in. Meaning, according to this interpretation, that Noach waited to the absolute last second for his generation to do tshuva. Right? He believed in them. He thought they were going to do it. And only when he was absolutely forced and looked like he had to face reality and he actually had to go into the teva, so that's when he did. So according to that, beautiful Liman Schuss, according to that reading, it's unbelievable that Noach was such a tzaddik that he really truly did believe in the people of his generation. Along the same lines, right, Rav Melech Biderben quotes the Ohev Yisrael, the name of the Zlash of Rebbe, that the word Emuna in a different context can mean something a little differently. Meaning that the Pasuk says in the Megillah, that Mordechai raised Esther because Esther's parents had died. Pasuk says, "Vayhi omein es Hadassah." Right, that Mordechai raised Hadassah, which is Esther. He raised her. Right, so Emuna is the language of bringing things along, of nurturing them, of raising them, etc. Right, so says Lasha Vareva. Right, Emuna has a way of bringing things to be. And when a person has complete emunah and bitachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that has a power to be motzi, a power to create, a power to bring about, right, whatever you have emunah in. A person has 100% emunah bitachon that Hashem will give him parnasa, so the parnasa is coming. Right? It's a way of unlocking things in this world. So says the Zlash HaVarev, very beautiful, Noach didn't want to have full emunah that the Mabul would come, because that would bring about, help bring about the Mabul. That would be one of the ways to destroy, quote unquote, the world. So Noach was Mamin Veino Mamin, meaning he obviously believed in what Hashem told him, and obviously listened to what Hashem said, but he didn't want to fully believe it, because that would be a way of having Emunah and bringing the Mabul into the world, which obviously he didn't want. And it's also similar to what the vision in Tzarebi, the first vision in Tzarebi, that Tzemach Tzadik says about the pasuk of Es Elokim Es Halech Noach, that when Noach walked with Hashem, what do you mean Noach walked with Hashem? Right, what does that mean? So if you pay attention, right, the name of Hashem, right, there is Elokim. Right, we know that Elokim is Midas Hadin, as opposed to Hashem, which is Midas HaRachamim. So he says, I mean that Noach walked with Elokim, meaning that even during the times of Midas Hadin, right, he was still one with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He had Emunah and Bitachon that everything would be okay, the Gamzu L'Tova, and even in that sentence, right, he even though things were falling apart around him, he still took care to have Emunah Bitachon in Hashem, and that was that was his great righteousness. That was able to save him, obviously, and build the next generation of people. Okay, we'll come back to that a little bit at the end, but I just want to point out something that my wife noticed, and Chazal do put an emphasis on this as well. And there's a strange emphasis on the land being corrupted. If you look in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yidal, through Gimel, right, just the beginning of the parsha, right? The second, third, fourth, and fifth pasuk, right? The pasuk says, just to read it off to you, Vatisha Ches Ha'aretz Lefnei Elokim. Right, the land became destroyed, or not destroyed, because they hadn't destroyed it yet, but it corrupted, okay, this says the article, fine, okay. Vatimelei Ha'aretz Chamas, and the land was filled with Chamas, right, however you translate that, robbery, or falling apart of society, whatever. Vayar Lukim Es Ha'aretz V'nei Nishchasa, Hashem saw that the land was, corrupted, whatever, disgusted. Ki Yishchis Kol Basaretz Darkol La'aretz, because every piece of, every flesh, every meat, every living thing had corrupted its ways on the land. And Hashem said to Noach, the end of all flesh, right, has come for me. The land has been filled with chamas, and I'm destroying the land. It mentions the word ha'aretz, it mentions the word land, six times in those psukim. And what's with the emphasis of the land? What's going on over here? You don't have to refer to the world as ha'aretz. Right, the land itself. Like you just said, I'm destroying the world, I'm destroying the people, I'm destroying the chayav. What's this emphasis on the land? So, the Rishonim do deal with this, but I thought that this is reminiscent of the end of Parshas Achrimos. At the end of Parshas Achrimos talks about, at the end, right, we read it on Yom Kippur, talks about all of the immorality, all of the immoral relationships that Hashem tells us not to have. At the end of the Parsha, says, just if you have a chumash, so it's a Perek Yudches, Pasuk of Dalid. It talks about what will happen if people actually do, right, these quote unquote abominable things. So the pasuk says, just a quote pasuk of Dalid, right? Al titemu b'chol eila, don't become tame through all these forbidden relationships. Ki b'chol eila nitmu agoyim, because through these are the things that the goyim do. Asher nim shalech nidechem, that I'm sending away from you, meaning the 7-8 nations that Bnei Israel are going to inherit Eretz Yisrael from. Vatitma ha'aretz, and the land becomes tamei. Vayefkod avonah aleh, and I'll spit out, right, its sin upon it. Vataki aretz es yoshveh, the land will spit out its inhabitants. Vishmartem ha'sem eshchu guzem eshpizasev lo shasu is called ha'avos ha'ela. Okay, Hashem tells them not to do the virus again. Ki is called ha'avos ha'ela su anshei ha'aretz ha'shelef nechem. Because all the people who were living in Eretz Yisrael did these immoral things. Vatitma ha'aretz, and the land became tamei. V'lo saki aretz eschem b'tama ha'chem osa. Do not let the land spit you out if you make it tamei, if you contaminate it. Kasher ka'az ha'goy ha'shelef nechem, like it spit out the nations, or it's going to spit out, right, the seven nations, right, when you get there. So the parsha, the Torah there emphasizes the idea of vatitma ha'aretz, that the land becomes impure. Right? It says twice, says that if this happens in Eretz Yisrael, right, the land becomes tameva, and the land will spit out whatever nation is living on it. The Netziv says something fascinating in Hamek Dover. He says that even though there are people there who live in the land who are not necessarily evil, but they're just balei taiva. Right? They're just people who can't control themselves. They can't control their desires. They're men of desire. And that animalistic lust gets them kicked out of the land. Again, because the pasuk says, just one of the psukim I read, he says, meaning that the anshei ha'aretz, the people on the land, all they did that was wrong were these inappropriate and immoral relationships. And therefore, vatitma aretz, and the land became tame. There's a concept of our actions being mitame the land. Right? The Gemara says in Shabbos as well, daf lam gimel. Right? It says it's not only relevant to Eretz Yisrael. It says bavon gilui arayos, for inappropriate relationships, golus ba la'olam, exile comes to the world. Right? And the people that are exiled, etc., quotes the pasuk that I just quoted before, vatitma aretz, the land became tame, and it spits you out, etc. Now, how do I know the people of the Mabul were guilty of that avera? Right, we know they violated Hamas, right? They stole from one another, right? The story in the Midrashim about kids stealing nuts, less than a Shavapruta, right? That caused the whole breakdown of society because you couldn't prosecute, right? If you imagine you're selling nuts, you have, let's say, I don't know, 500 peanuts, and 500 kids come and take one peanut. So what do you do? So no one can sell anything. That's what they were doing. People were stealing less than a Shavapruta, and you can't sell anything, and you can't take them to court, because what are you going to do? You're going to prosecute 500 kids for less than a penny? They can't even pay you for it. So it caused the breakdown of society. But what about Arayos? So Chazal explained that the Dor HaMabul were certainly guilty of that as well. Rashi here quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Zayin, that the word language of Vatishacheis Haaretz, and the land became corrupted, right, is a language of Arayos. Rashi says over here, Lashon Erva Vavodah Zara. Right, that they were violating these inappropriate relationships. Not only that, but the animals were corrupted. Right, Rashi says that ki ishchis kol basar es darko la'aretz, that all of the people, all of the flesh, all the animals, all the living things had corrupted their nature. And he says afilu behema chayav ha'of niskakin l'sheino minon. The animals were interbreeding. Even a behema were niskakin l'sheino minon, were mating with not that species. Right, again, it's not so hard. I had an 8th grade Rebbe who loved to talk about this, Rabbi Pearl, who's a tzaddik atzum, and I still quote him from time to time, that it's not hard to see how a crocodile could mate with an eagle, could mate with an elephant, would lead to a freaking crazy animal like a dinosaur. So it's the concept of transmitting tumah to the land and the environment that you live on, right, is not a new phenomenon. And that's what perhaps what the pasuk is talking about, that the sins of the people, right, the chatayim, the fact that they corrupted their lives, corrupted the animals, and corrupted the land. And that's why Hashem had to destroy everything, because everything had been corrupted to the point of no return. That's why the pasuk said that Noach took animals and that had not corrupted their ways. But it's a straight-up pasuk that Noach took, Rashi there talks about it, that Noach took animals that had not interbred. And so maybe this is why, again, this is why Kosh Baruch Hu felt compelled to melt off the first three tefachim of the land when he brought the Mabul, right? Rashi says that as well, right? That the waters were so hot that the ground literally melted three tefachim. Maybe Kosh Baruch Hu felt he needed to do something, you know, physical, right? To quote-unquote purify the land that had been corrupted. Now, why is this relevant for us, right? For people living in Teaneck, L.A., Yerushalayim, whatever. Right? Let's say you're living in, I don't know, Teaneck, and you're planning on making Aliyah, or moving to Canada, or Florida, or Texas, or whatever. So what do you care about what happens to the land and the environment that you're in right now? Now, okay, that might be a little callous and cold-hearted, but more than that, right, leaving that aside, it trains a person to think bigger picture. Right? We're all very focused on ourselves. Kids, for sure. Teens, maybe even more so, right? The world revolves around them, and that's how they view the world. That's how their brain is developed, right? They're not mature enough to really kind of expand and think about other people, usually. The staff in the seminaries and yeshivas and people who live here joke that when the kids come to Israel for the year, they don't even realize that there's an entire country going on around them, right? It's just them and their seminary or yeshiva experience. And it's not a critique, it's just how human nature is. But when you get a little bit older and you're able to take a step back and realize that there's more to your actions than just your own life, right, you start affecting the environment and the people and the animals and the land even with your actions, right, so your actions start to carry a little bit more weight. Right, when you realize that your actions affect you, but your people in the vicinity, your neighborhood, again, with nowadays with technology, with the internet and phones and stuff, it could be your actions affect, you know, even more people than just your little Dalai Lamas, right? The friendly neighborhood is a lot bigger nowadays than it used to be, right? But and even if to the point with the land and the animals, right? The spiritual quality of the land, so that's powerful stuff, right? And that's already crucial to internalize. I mean, that gives a person added pause, perhaps, if they think, you know, they're having a tough time making the right decisions, right? Perhaps that will give a person a little bit more to think about, and perhaps, you know, help them make a better decision. All right, we don't have time to dwell on this last few. I just want a couple quick hitters over here. But we talked about Sefer Dvarim being a Musar Sefer. Well, Bereishis is also definitely a Musar Sefer, maybe even more so. Learning the stories of the Avos, learning from their behavior and the stories that the Torah teaches us. Right? Again, if the Torah chose to record an incident, right, it meant to do that for posterity, right, forever, for us to study and learn from it. And therefore, we have to really kind of focus on the story of the Mabul. Again, I feel like we sell it short because we learned it when we were like five. But Hashem, we'll get to that in a second. The first thing that we should point out, I actually heard this on the radio this morning from an Israeli singer named Naftali Kempe, who happens to be fabulous, by the way. But he says, look at what, again, this is brought down also in the Mercer's Forum, etc., that look at what one man can accomplish, right? The world is going to hell, quite literally, right? One man can save the world, right? Again, so don't sell yourself short. Right? Even if things are crazy all around you, if life is nuts or things are going on, and if you're, I don't know, if you're paying attention to politics and things are crazy, or you're paying attention to sports and your team is in it or out of it, or if Rahman al-Islam, if you have more difficulties in life, right, as opposed to trivial things like that, right, even if things are crazy, you can still succeed and survive and even thrive and quite literally save worlds. Right, I had a friend of mine who used to say that a person is always faced with a choice to either survive or thrive. And you can thrive in any scenario, even if things are nuts. And Noach proves that. Right, so don't give up just because life is nuts. The second Eitzah that the Moses Farm bring out, I think it's in Sichos Mutzar, but I don't remember exactly. Like, again, I apologize, I didn't have really time to research these last few, is that if your environment is bad, as Noach's was, right? And Noach's generation was the worst, right? They got destroyed and all around them, Mabul, hot boiling water, etc. So if your environment is bad, you got to build yourself a teva to survive it. And nowadays, unfortunately, the environment around us is bad, right? No mistake about it, right? Western culture, all that type of stuff, penetrating our lives from the outside, from the inside, with the phones and the internet that we have in our house. Now, if we're all going to live like that, and most of us do, right? We need to make sure to take certain precautions. You need to build yourself a teva to protect yourself, right? So for boys, that's the base medrash, right? Being in the base medrash, if you're of that age, obviously, if you're learning in yeshiva, so staying in yeshiva and making sure that Dalet Amos, again, it's much easier to use that symbolism when you're in yeshiva, because you just stay in the teva. The base medrash looks like a teva. Four walls, a roof, staying there, learning spirituality, stay away from the outside, right? Right? That's the teva. For girls, it's a bit harder because you don't really have that physical box that you can lock yourself in. There are certainly places to go learn, but it's more than, I think this is important for boys as well, but it just hits home for girls more because there's no base medrash to run to. Building yourself a teva doesn't mean necessarily a physical space. It's much more than just a physical space. It's your friends, how you spend your time, your leisure, even your chesed, right? There's chesed l'shma, and then there's chesed where you know there's going to be a social aspect to it, for example. Right? There's every decision you make, the way you live your life, right? The way you spend your time, your friends, etc., there's a concept of building yourself a teva, right? Building gedarim, building fences that you can protect yourself from any aspect of the bad environment. I'm not saying, you know, going to socialize is bad. I'm just saying that there is an ideal in every aspect of life and where you can put a fence and make sure you're protected from the bad environment that's around us. Third, and this is Rav Victor Miller elaborates in this. I saw this a bunch of times in his forum, and also I think I saw it in the weekly email that he sends, that he doesn't send out anymore, but that the people who are disseminating his Torah sent out. And it's not something that's so PC to talk about nowadays, but it needs to be discussed. And that is, as I kind of started to allude to before, the Mabul shows us that the concept of Schar Va'onesh is very real, right? Think about it. Like, again, we learn these stories from when we're 5 years old, so it doesn't really hit us as it should. God destroyed the world because of sin. I can't even put it more simply than that. Noach and his family sat in a teva for a year while Hashem melted the world, because people decided, you know, their lives went in the wrong direction. Right? Hashem was very clear about that. Not only in the Torah, He told Noah straight out. Right? Again, we read it before. Kate called Basar Balafanai Kimala Aharetz Hamas Mipneihem. Hashem told them, the people in the world have sinned. They are corrupted their lives. There is nothing I can do. I'm going to destroy them. And Hashem told them, this is, reading this story should make the concept of punishment for wrongdoing real in our minds, right? We don't like to talk about it because people like to be free and just choose and do whatever you want. And obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes by taking all extenuating circumstances into account, 100%. Now, it's not supposed to be like Hashem is, you know, going to throw us all into Gehenna forever and ever. No, but the concept of punishment for making the wrong choices exists, right? It caused the world to be destroyed once, right? And even though Hashem promised never to do it again, right? He promised never to do it again to the entire world, right? It has certainly happened in small pockets since then. An obvious example, and frankly not so small a pocket, is the Holocaust. Rav Chanan Wasserman is famous for saying that the Jews in Europe rebelled against Hashem, so Hashem rebelled against them, quote-unquote, or something to that effect. They declared war on Hashem, or Hashem declared war on them, I forget. Is it true? I don't know. I wasn't there. I read it in several Sfarim that quote that. Rav Victor Miller quotes that all the time. That's what he said. I don't know. But that's a concept of schar ve'onesh. Again, I'm not saying why it happened. Chas v'shalom. I don't mean to dwell on that point. But there is a concept of small and large destructions that Hashem has done since then because of chet. Right? When it was small bits of destruction through natural disasters, especially water, right, like hurricanes and tsunamis, those are supposed to be a message. Right? Those are supposed to be a reminder for us that if you make the wrong choices, chas v'shalom, there is some sort of reckoning that comes at some point. Right? I remember seeing a picture in the media of a rainbow over one of the destroyed harbors in Jersey after Hurricane Sandy. And the caption was, right, a beacon of calm amongst the storm, or something to that effect. And I'm like, bro, you clearly did not read Genesis. Right? Again, that's not that a rainbow over a destroyed harbor because of water. I mean, it really doesn't get more clear than that. Right? If you're on the right wavelength, right, you see these messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's just impossible to read the Parsha and actually think about the Parsha without getting a serious dose of a wake-up call. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the world because of chet. It's not ambiguous. But people don't want to hear about it. So I may have been a little bit too harsh in because I'm trying to rush through it and it's Erev Shabbos and it's time to, I got to cook some stuff and whatever. But I did just want to mention it, that it's important to realize. Now, yeah, you shouldn't get depressed. You shouldn't get afraid. But there is a concept of making the right choices and being strong and realizing that there is a right and wrong. And it's not just a free-for-all in this world. And there is a Rachman Atzlan, Lo Aleinu, Chas V'Shalom, a reckoning, right? If people, you know, do choose make the wrong choices for an extended period of time. All right, not to leave on that negative Dvar Torah. Last quick, tiny little vort that Avigdor Miller points out, right? It's not all doom and gloom with him. I feel like I bring out his most intense or kind of depressing Dvar Torah. He points out a final lesson on an upbeat note, which is the simcha of being alive. That when Noach left the Teva, he brought korbanos. He was so happy to be alive. He appreciated the gift of life. And that's something that we can do as well. This is something that Victor Miller talks about a ton. Just appreciate the simple beauty of life, of breathing, of enjoying food, of having a wonderful family, of hearing the birds sing, of all this type of stuff. Noach got out of the Teva. He brought korbanos. He was so happy that he was alive. Right? It's the greatest gift that Kosh Baruch can give us. And it's up to us to appreciate it. Right, says Ramban, right at the end of Parshas Bo, which we quote all the time, that a person has to know and he has to give thanks that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is taking care of it, right? To recognize and be moda to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the tremendous gift. So that's also let's leave on that note. It's a tremendous simcha. Have an extra l'chaim on Shabbos, right? Give a little appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the amazing world that He has given us, and have a tremendous Shabbos. And Mitzvah Shem, we will convene live again next week. Until then, have a great Shabbos.